is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. At the bottom of the hour, my guest is Jay Greenfield. This is going to be a fantastic interview. I am going to be talking to him about his first novel, which is a thought-provoking and compelling book called Max's Diamonds. I'm really looking forward to talking to him after I talk to my first guest, who is Brenda Drake. Hi, Brenda, are you there?
I'm here.
Well, Brenda, it is so nice to welcome you to the show. I know that you just had your books released on January 3rd. It's a new series called Library Jumpers.
Actually, it released last year. The paperback version of it released January 3rd.
Oh, okay. So the paperback version just came out January 3rd, and you have another one coming out on February 7th. Is that also the paperback version?
No, that's the hardcover, and it's book two of the Library Jumpers series.
Well, this sounds fascinating. It's because it's about a bookworm, and since I am the original bookworm, I've read over, well, at least 10,000 books and probably more, and sounds like an exciting series.
Well, I enjoy writing it, so I hope others enjoy reading it.
Well, I had not had a chance to read it, I will admit, because I have been a little bit busy this past year working on Joy on Paper. And I was so excited when I heard over the past year, I've talked to so many writers, and they have always talked so much about your wonderful, event that you came out, the pitch wars.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
And I had Barbara Poyle from Irene Goodman's agency on recently, and she mentioned it, and it just has... It is an amazing event that you have created.
It's, of course, it's my baby, and I love it, and I love the people that are involved in it, and it's a great way for writers to get to that next step with their manuscripts. I don't know if anyone to know about what it is. Pitch Wars is a contest where we have agented and published authors, industry interns, and editors pick one writer, and they work with that writer on their entire manuscript for 2 months. And then we have a huge agent showcase on my blog where the agents go and read their pitch and first page, and then they make requests from there.
Well, I know that starts the actual... event starts in August, but I know you have some deadlines coming up as early as February. What are those?
Oh, for as far as the contests?
Yeah.
We have a smaller contest called Pitch Madness. It's the one that I started doing writer contests with, and it's just writers submit their pitch and first page, and teams pick their top 10 that they like. We have We have flesh readers that read through all the flesh and pick out the best of the best that we can find, and then we showcase them on the blog, and then agents that were chosen to participate in the contest or agreed to sign up go ahead and read and make requests. And that starts in February. The submission is in February, and then the agent showcases in March.
Now, for Pitch Wars, of course, you need to have a complete novel. Completed.
For all of my contests, your novel needs to be completed and never published, and as clean as you can get it, because it's helping you get to that next level of getting representation. So it really has to be completed.
So the difference, but what's the difference between Pitch Madness is sort of a small version of.
Right. There's limited mentoring. We just kind of go over the pitch in the first page and help you correct that and make changes if needed. Whereas Pitch Wars is a revision period of 2 months. It's like really intense because you're going over your entire manuscript and fixing all the holes and any kind of issues you have as far as voice or character and stuff like that. And it's like a revision. It's a huge revision, and it's for a few months there.
So on with the Pitch Wars, you have how many agents will you be having this year?
Well, last year we had about 50 agents, and they're pretty top agents that read through the showcase. Pitch Wars was in its fifth year last year, and to date we have over 200 successes where writers have gotten agents or even went on to getting book deals right away because of Pitch Wars.
Well, I know Barbara Powell, you know, just raved about the event, and she has identified, you know, with so many of the people who have been involved. And this is what you have come out with is so really beneficial for writers, because it is difficult. Writers have such a difficult time often getting past that query letter.
Correct. Yeah, and I had that too. I mean, so it came, it was born out of all the errors that I did when I started out writing and trying to get an agent and stuff like that. And I still did several other errors after that. But it's a very difficult time for people, and it's hard to figure out. You know, you would send queries and you'd get rejections on your manuscript, so you couldn't figure out what was wrong with your manuscript, that it wasn't getting a yes. So that's where that idea came from, is, well, maybe we could help those writers that are almost there, but there's something wrong with their manuscript. And authors and interns and editors who have been there before can maybe look at it and see if they could find that error and have them revise and get it all shiny for the agents. Round.
Now, how, once the you have the agents lined up, they select the person, the mentee that they want to work with?
The mentors are not agents, but they are published or agented authors, and then industry interns or editors. They, writers submit applications to the mentors that they would want to work with, and from those submissions, the mentors pick who they, which story speaks to them that they want to work with.
And are there all types of, all genres involved?
Yeah, so it's fiction, and it's all categories and genres. So, but it's only fiction, it's not nonfiction.
And does it matter if it's young adult or adult? Or
all the categories are included.
All the categories are included.
Mm-hmm.
So when... once they make the selection, the mentor reads the mentee's
full manuscript,
and then they start working really one-on-one, back and forth.
Yeah, they do an editing letter, and they have them revise, and they read and make sure that they've gotten the grasp of what needed to be fixed. And then we have a finished product at the end, and we put it up on my blog as a showcase.
Wow, this is amazing. This is really, I think this is a fantastic, fantastic program.
Tell us
some of your success stories.
Oh, wow. There are so many of them. Like, I couldn't, like, pull them out. Because, okay, that was on the spot there. So, oh, gosh.
Well, Tracy Chi was one of them, right?
Tracy
Chi?
Oh, yes, Tracy Chi. There you go. The reader, and also she's a mentor. Her book is fabulous, and, you know, it's like there's a lot of mentors that, like, that I can think of, and then I'm like, there's so many successes that I get stuck. I didn't even think about this question. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. No, because, you know, what I it's funny, you write a series about somebody who loves books, and of course Tracy Chi's book, The Reader, is about a place in this in time where nobody knows how to read, and it was such a, for me, and I'm sure you are also a great reader, that we get to this point, we can't imagine not being able to read. And so
Yes. This
idea that you've come out with of, now, your character in this Library Jumpers actually jumps to different libraries?
Right. Through a gateway book, that's how they travel to different libraries where a mystic world is hidden behind different bookcases in all the great libraries of the world.
And are they they're the great libraries of the world. Have you visited some of the great libraries of the world so that you can...
Unfortunately, not very many, but that is on my bucket list.
Well, I was thinking that once you have like 6 or 7 of these books written, that will be a wonderful little documentary you can do.
Yeah, or I could do like a little tour, like have people go with me and tour. That would be wonderful.
Exactly. I've been to many of the great libraries in the world, and it would be a wonderful, wonderful tour.
My favorite, of course, is where the book starts out, and I remember as a young girl going to this library, the Boston Athenaeum, and it's just amazing. It just always feels magical when you go into those older libraries, and you wonder about the history and what happened in those libraries.
Well, I know the feeling. As a child, I grew up in northern Michigan in a very small town, and we didn't have a library. And I don't think there's a library within 200 miles. But when we moved to the city, I was very young, and my first memory is my older sister taking my hand and walking me up the sidewalk to the McGregor Public Library, which was one of those old, beautiful buildings. And you open the doors, and the oak floors and mahogany everywhere. And they had one of these enormous children's rooms where the books went all the way around the room, and I remember my sister and I, we just stood there. We could not believe that we were in, it was, you know, just paradise for us to see all those books. And we started at the A's and worked our way around that room over the years. And there is really nothing like that feeling, and I just love when people do take their children to libraries. I don't know if they have quite as much impact. Some of these modern libraries I don't like as much, but these older libraries where everything was so beautiful, and it was just amazing.
And it seems so much larger, like when you're younger, when you go into those libraries, and when you get older, you're like, oh, this seems a little smaller than I thought when I first went into it. And it's like... The older libraries are like castles for books. They're just amazing.
They are, and it is a wonderful. I always tell people, if you're, you know, you're taking your children somewhere and you're going to a city like to Boston, to Detroit, to Washington D.C., to just to walk in the library, it has this awe-inspiring nature that you know there's mystery within. And it's just a matter of you know, picking up the book. And as you have developed this interesting character, her name's Gia, is that right?
Uh-huh.
And she gets to jump into oh, I think it's a beautiful premise.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I think that you know, as we love reading, that anything we can do to reach out to readers and to get more people reading is just fantastic. And I think, of course, this your series is for is middle grade or young adult?
It's young adult. It tends to be on the younger side of young adult.
And I think this is so important to reach out to young readers and to get them started and to get them fascinated with books at an early age. So you are doing such a great service just on that side of the writing world. But then again, with this pitch madness and pitch wars, this is fantastic. And as you said, you created this 5 years ago. How did you come out with this idea?
Well, I had been doing contests for, I would say, since 2008 or 2009, around then, and I was doing Pitch Madness, and I was doing Twitter pitch parties on the hashtag PitMad, and agents would make requests, but there wasn't very many success stories coming out because they would find that the manuscripts would fall apart. So I was thinking, well, what can I do to help them get over that next obstacle of their manuscript falling apart? And that's how Pitch Wars came about.
Well, as I said, this is a wonderful thing that you've done for writers. And people can find out more about it by going to your website, which is?
Brenda-Drake.com.
Brenda-Drake.com. And you have the information. I know that you have there a calendar. And as you mentioned, Pitch Madness submissions are, you have an opening February 24th. Is that correct?
Yes. So it'll be open all day. And everyone, we take all the submissions. We don't limit it because we want to find the best that we can find. So when you say
all the submissions, what do they have to submit on that day?
Yeah, they'll do their 35-word pitch and their first page.
So a 35-word pitch and the first page. They send that in. And then from February 24th?
There'll be a form on my blog to submit on, and it'll give all the instructions on how what to do. And actually, I'm coming up the blog post about it this week, so that will be going up with all the instructions and who the teams are, and so we have some great hosts that host on their blog and help get the pitches and the pages all cleaned up for the agents.
Well, I think this is fantastic. I love your name, Brenda Drake. That's a name for a character.
thank you.
I
married the right man with the right last name.
You did, because it is absolutely perfect. When I first heard it, I said, Brenda Drake, is she a character in a book? So it is such a perfect name. It's an easy name to remember, and people can go to brenda-drake.com and read all about what's happening with Pitch Madness first. It's a sort of tiptoeing into and getting ready for Pitch Wars in August. So I think this is fantastic. I am so always so thrilled when I meet fellow enthusiasts, people who just want to get out there and help writers. And that's what I try to do with Joy on Paper. I want to just get the word out that to be able to read, to be able to go into another world, to jump into a book is such a fantastic thing for people. And you've done a beautiful job, Brenda, and I'm very proud
of you.
And I just want to wish you...
Oh, I feel blessed because of the community and everybody that gets involved in it. It's not just my effort. There's so many people that, the mentors and the people, my assistants that help me with all the contests. I'm so blessed with, and the writers that participate. Everyone's just always so amazing.
And the feeling is mutual, I'm sure. So I just want to thank you so much for being on today, and I want to just wish you the best of luck with Library Jumpers. And Guardian of Secrets, which is coming out on February 7th, is a new book, right?
It's book two.
Book two. Okay. Well, maybe you could pop in again in February and talk to us about that book.
Okay. That would be wonderful.
That'd be wonderful. And then you can give us a little, one more little reminder to everybody about... jumping
pitch
in
madness.
And to pitch madness.
Oh, okay. Sounds good.
Okay. Well, Brenda, thanks so much. And
thank you.
I really appreciate you being on today. Bye for now.
Bye.
Oh, that's fantastic. She's a lovely girl, and what a clever idea. What an absolutely clever idea to come out with this pitch madness. I'm going to be having Barbara Powell on again in this month, and she is going to be talking to us more about what she looks for as a literary agent in a book, and how Pitch Madness has been an influence in the industry. And that's the important thing for you all to remember if you're out there and you want to get noticed, you have a book that's unpublished, and you want to work with some really, really great people, this is an opportunity. So go to Brenda, and there's a dash there, so remember, brenda-drake.com, and that's always happens if you don't register early enough. You always land up with having to do something like that. So Again, I always remind everyone, please, please register your website early, even if you're not ready to publish your book for 3 or 4 years. Now, I'm going to take a quick commercial break, and when I come back, I'm going to be talking to a fantastic writer. I can't believe it's his first book, Jay Greenfield. So we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brenvick, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side, on the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, 2 blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I'm back, and I'm going to be going in a few minutes to my guest, Jay Greenfield. And is he on? Okay. I'm so happy to welcome you to the program, Jay.
I'm very happy to be here.
Wow. This is going to be a rather emotional interview, because I tell you, your book, Max's Diamonds, is really quite amazing. How can I say? For many years, well, there was a period in my time when I read like every Holocaust book that was ever written. And then for years, I couldn't read Holocaust books. And so when I came upon this book, Max's Diamonds, which, by the way, I cannot believe is a first book. It's so perfect. It really brought me so many memories. I get very emotional just thinking about this book.
Okay, well, I hope neither of us cried during the interview.
No, I hope not. Because this is really an amazing story. It is a story about, I don't know. I as I said, I get so excited about this book. Tell us how you came out with this idea. You have your protagonist, whose name is Paul, grew up in Rockaway, which is where you grew up, right?
That is correct, yes. But Paul is not me.
No, Paul is not you.
He's a fictional character.
And a beautifully developed fictional character.
Well, how did I come to write it? I'm 84 years old, and in my I don't feel it, but I am. When I was 8 or 9 years old, I became, since I'm Jewish, very obsessed with the Holocaust. We did have relatives in Europe, many of whom perished in it. And when the war ended, I grew up in a summer town on the beach, which is in many ways resembles parts of Florida. And in the Jewish prisoners were not human beings. There were numbers on the road to extinction. And when I would see these people, and see them very often, kind of, I didn't know how to deal with them, and I tried to avoid them. I both wanted to ask and didn't ask, you know, what was it like, and how did you survive? And there was one, and I knew, or I know now from other readings, that quite often that was the case. And that raises obviously all kinds of emotional issues. And I wanted to write, I've read a lot of Holocaust books too, probably not as many as you have, but I wanted to write with some about a person namely Paul, who did not directly participate in the Holocaust. He was born in Europe in Czechoslovakia in 1933. His father believed what Hitler was saying and got the family to America as quickly as they could, which turned out to be a blessing for everybody. But Paul couldn't help but remember that he was from Czechoslovakia originally. And I wanted to write a book about the Holocaust impact on someone who did not directly suffer its horrors, and that was Paul. And indeed, the twist to the book, and I don't know where I got this idea from, was that Paul would also be someone who benefited from the Holocaust, in the sense that Max, the title of the character in the title, in some way or other, smuggled into America a fortune in diamonds, which originated, in some way that's never explained until the very end. And I just wanted to write something which, at least in my experience, had not been written before. Say two things about that, then I'll shut up. I'm being much too long-winded now.
No.
In probably the best book I've ever read about the Holocaust is a graphic memoir called Maus, M-A-U-S, the German word for mice, by Art Spiegelman, which won the Pulitzer Prize. And in that book, Spiegelman's father, this is not fiction, tells him about his experiences in Auschwitz, and he has every reason to be truthful in talking to his son. And some of the things that he says are absolutely wrong. And to him, they were absolutely true. Because I don't think anyone can suffer what these people suffered and give a reasonable, historically accurate description of what had happened. It was just too awful. You're trying to survive from day to day, and you're not taking notes for the historical record. So that's an important part of the book. I'll say that a little bit differently. That is, most of the narrators, maybe all of the narrators, even the really famous ones, like Elie Wiesel, and funny, the other name escapes me, but most of them were wrong on things that they said. The narrators tend to be inaccurate. It's not their fault. It's just the impossibility of remembering accurately nightmarish things that constantly threaten your life. It's probably too long an answer, but I can't take it back.
Oh, that's okay. No, it's, you know, you touch on so many aspects in this book. Of course, we have it's set after World War II, and it goes through the 50s, and it spans many decades. And one of the things that it covers, of course, is Paul's attempt to sort of fit into the waspish world of New York at the time.
Well, you know, I think what you said is accurate, but I don't think it fairly describes what I was trying to do. It may be too negative the way you described it, but in the Judaism has a history of 4,000 years, and there has never been a time and a place that Jews have done as well as they have in America during the post-war years until now. And during my lifetime, Jews became more and more accepted in institutions and places that formerly excluded them. If someone wrote a book called, I can't remember the author's name, called How Did the Jews Become White? It's a horrible title, but it kind of sums it up pretty accurately. So it wasn't that, I hope it wasn't, that he was just trying to pass off as somebody who he wasn't. I hope I conveyed what it was like to live during a time when opportunities for Jews and acceptance of Jews was increasing so much. And that had a downside. And that downside was that you might lose your tradition and you might assimilate to the degree that you stop being who you were. And I didn't want that to happen to Paul. And I didn't want it to happen to Jay Greenfield either. And I think, that was my hope. I think I succeeded.
Oh, I think you succeeded. And it's, as I was saying, this is your first novel. It's hard to believe that, this is the first book that you've written.
No, this is the first book I've published.
Oh, the first book you've published. Okay, because...
I wrote one novel that when it was all done, I just put it on the shelf.
Put it on the shelf.
Diffuse. I wrote one novel that was very autobiographical, and a family member who I cared about a great deal and still care about a great deal asked me not to publish it, and I didn't. There are authors who will deal with all kinds of horrible personal things without any consideration for what it does to other members of the family, and I'm simply not one of them. So I'm writing a novel right now which borrows heavily from the novel that I put on the shelf. That's an interesting subject. It deals largely with the relations between Jewish civil rights workers and African-American civil rights activists, relationships which were not always smooth.
Well, of course, this is a subject that you know a great deal about because you went to the South during the civil rights movement.
I did, yes. And I don't want to depreciate myself, but I went for 3 weeks, and I've been talking about it for 53 years.
But you did. You made achievements. You achieved something from your trip.
I was part of what I think is one of the greatest things in American history. How we started. We have a long way to go. How we started to get out of the Jim Crow. Changing things radically in certain parts of the South. And although there was violence and some deaths, there was remarkably little. And that's due to a lot of people, but I think it's due also to the American legal system.
Now, as an attorney, you were an attorney for many years. How many...
I was in a large international firm stationed in New York. And I say that I actively practiced for 50 years, 35 during the day and 15 at night. I was a very active attorney, and I still think of myself as a lawyer, although now all I do is write.
Well, there must be something up there in the water, because I've had some really great, successful New York lawyers. Robert Tannenbaum, of course, has been on my program. And Linda Fairstein.
She's been enormously successful.
Oh, she is, and a fantastic writer. Now, getting back to Max's Diamonds, there is this element of suspense that we don't know and that you carry through the book, which I think was very well done, because we don't know the full secret behind Max's Diamonds until the end. One of the moving things, of course, I love through, which is, essential to this whole entire story, is the story of Wagner, and that carries throughout, coming from a family. My sister played the clarinet, I played the flute, and my son's the violin and the piano. So this subject of whether or not Jews should play Wagner is something that, we've all thought about over the years. And, of course, this is part of the story of what Paul... his first encounter really with Max, and the decision of whether or not he should play Wagner.
It that issue has, to the extent it can be resolved, has been resolved. I mean, the Israeli Symphony plays Wagner. And David Birnbaum was the one who insisted on it. I'm, to this day, I don't know whether that's the right decision or not. But that reason. For how long do you let the Holocaust control what you do, and to what extent do you blame people who weren't alive then for what happened?
Well, this is it. It's a deep question.
Yes. But my answer, which is not in the book, is that I think any group has the potential of doing things that horrible, just as I think almost any group has the potential of doing things very noble and wonderful. And, you know, if I knew the answer of how you tell who is who, I guess I'd become a famous historian.
Well, this is a difficult period in time. It's like it never. I think for some of us who are perhaps a little younger than you, there was a period where we thought we were through with all of this nonsense. There was a window somewhere in maybe the 70s or the 80s where we thought this would all be past us, but we're all facing the same situation again. It's very difficult.
I don't, you know, I hate to be cynical or negative because basically I like to consider myself a positive person. I don't think you'll ever be through with it. I don't think history is a march to a noble end. It certainly isn't.
Well, of course, in your book, you have, as I said, you carry this storyline of whether or not Jews should play Wagner, and it goes on throughout Paul's life, right to the end of the book.
Yes, well, the very end of the book, I don't want to give the plot.
No.
But the very end of the book is a young woman who claims to be his daughter, and he hopes is his daughter, decides that she's going to play Wagner in Israel. And the whole, many parts of the large family violently opposed to it. One of the major characters who never appears on stage, but who's talked about a great deal, who was a war hero both during World War II and later when she moved to Israel, she's organizing picketing of it.
Well, you know, as I said, for me it's very emotional too, because at one point my family and I, we went to Poland to... it was the anniversary of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising.
Yes.
And so we were there, and we went to we went back to the places where the family was from, and it was a very emotional event, and something that even at that time they were talking about whether or not anybody should play Wagner, so it's brought back a lot of memories for me of that trip that we made to Poland.
That is very moving. I'm not a musician. When I was a kid, I played in my high school band, and I did play without realizing it, Tannhäuser. But I won't go to listen to Wagner. And I don't know if that's rational at all, but I just can't.
Yeah, I know. It's exactly what I face, too. I know that there's no amount of money would get me to play Wagner. I wouldn't play it. I just couldn't do it. And I was one of the most shocking things that ever happened was that time in synagogue, somebody had their cell phone on, and it played the Valkyries. I just, even now when I think about how somebody could have that on their as their phone ring was so shocking. I still, when I think about it, I can't imagine how anyone could have that as their phone ring. So it's interesting how you have woven that throughout the story. And I love all of your characters. I mean, you have really developed everything from, you know, the backstory of Paul and his mother, and then of course his relationships over the years with various people. You've done so beautifully.
I greatly appreciate that. You know, and I'd be very, and I hope and I'd welcome, you know, people reading the book. I'd like them to think about it, and I'd like them. I think it's an enjoyable read, even though it deals with such somber subjects.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's not in the vein that there's anything that you know. It is. I think it is. There's a lot of hope and a lot of a lot of such thought provoking ideas in it that offer sort of your mind as you're reading the book. You're thinking, yes, this is right. This is right. Maybe this is right. It's so thought provoking, and it's not. It's not a difficult read. I think it's a very, very good read. And you know, Robert Tannenbaum, who was a DA, you know, in New York, he always talks about the essential books, the books that you really shouldn't miss. And I think that Max's Diamonds can be put in that category. And when I do a list of, I'm going to do a list of essential books, and I'm going to put Max's Diamonds in there because I think that this book, first of all, you managed to evoke a period in New York that really is alive. One really feels one is in that place when you start all the way back right after World War II. I really found that your writing was on this. The description was fantastic.
Well, I do appreciate this. Those were horrible, Fred, but those were kind of colorful times. And, you know, I grew up in a house where Yiddish was spoken a great deal. Yet I feel so totally American and so appreciative of the opportunities that I had and that America's made available to Jews in other places. We were being horribly persecuted. So I hope that comes across.
Oh, it does. It does. That the real land of opportunity idea is alive and well in Max's Diamonds.
Okay, I hope it stays alive and well in America, which is hard to do when you're talking about deporting 11 million people. I don't think you want to get into politics. I retract that remark.
No, it's okay. I understand. It's, you know, for Jewish people who have always been in America, particularly at the forefront of civil rights movements and of you know, protecting rights in general, it's a subject that you know we can't avoid, and the importance of. For example, what you did in the civil rights era and of other Jewish lawyers in that period of time is something that we don't want to forget. We want always to honor it and remember it.
Okay, my new book deals with that, but from a new angle. The fact that it wasn't all paradise. To some degree, many of the black activists resented people, many of them Jewish, who came down there. As one of them put it to me, and this will be in the new book, you know, you come down here for 3 weeks, and then you go back, and I've got to live here my whole life. So, but, you know, I'm here to talk about Max's Diamonds, not about my new book. but obviously I'm wrapped up in the new
book. That's okay. When is the new book coming out?
I hope in the fall, but I spent a long time. But writing is very easy. Rewriting is impossibly hard.
Yes, that's what I always tell people. I love when people come to me, and I get quite often writers who come and say, I finished my book on Friday, and I'm ready to have it published on Monday. And I say, I don't think so.
You're ready to spend a year editing it if you really want it to be as good as you can.
Exactly. Well, you did a great job with Max's Diamonds. It's a wonderful read. It flows. It really flows very nicely. It's always when you have a book, you want the arc to be one that, you know, takes you up and down, and you do, and you manage to keep the suspense of that, you know, keeps us intrigued a little bit of the story about Max's Diamonds, and your character development is really great, and I'm so thrilled that I was able to have you on today, because, as I say, I feel that Max's Diamond is going to be one of those essential. I know it's going to be in every Hadassah book club read. You know, I going to Hadassah book clubs, they always are looking for a great book to read, and I know that this one is going to be very, very popular.
Well, thank you very much, and I enjoy talking to you.
Well, I want again to thank you, and I was thinking, when one of the you mentioned in the beginning of the book, Buttons and Bows, the song Buttons and Bows.
Yes.
And it reminded me of a story that my son had written, one of his stories that he had to write for some project, was about Jewish composers. And Buttons and Bows, of course, was written by Jay Livingston and Ray Evans, two fantastic Jewish composers. And I was thinking how much more fun it is to listen to Buttons and Bows. And they also wrote Que Sera Sera, and two Jewish writers whose songs are so uplifting and make people so happy to hear their music that... we can live without Wagner as long as we have Jace Livingston and Ray Evans.
And what they did in writing those very upbeat songs, and I don't know whether you were alive during World War II, but they were some very moving patriotic songs, largely written by Jews. What they did, I think, could never have happened any place but in America. I don't even think they could happen in Israel. They're too wrapped up in other problems.
No, you're right. It was exactly this joy of being able to be in America, to have this hope of a better life and making a better world, and all of these Jewish songwriters and all of this wonderful music that we have, Jewish music that celebrates this joy of life and that really is all-encompassing when it comes to loving sort of the world. And wanting to share some happiness, so I just love listening to all of those songwriters, and I enjoy reading your book. So, Jay Greenfield, thank you so much. I want to tell everyone they can find your book on Amazon and Barnes and Noble, wherever books are sold. It's a wonderful book, and I'm just really grateful that you came on today. And I will have you back on when the new book comes out.
I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Do you have a title for it yet?
Yes. Almost Friends.
Almost Friends.
About the relationship between this Jewish boy and this black boy as they grow up, and how they're never fully friends. They both want to, but there are too many things working against it.
Okay. Well, I'm looking to back maybe sometime after Rosh Hashanah. You'll be ready and coming out with your book, and we can have you back on, okay?
Okay, thank you very much, Joy.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Jay.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Whoa. This is, you know, it is, for me, a very emotional book, and I want to really recommend it. he's amazing. I mean, he's 83 years old and he's just gets his first book. Well, he's 84 now. He got his first book published when he's 83. It's a story of never giving up. I can tell you, this is fantastic. And a beautifully written book and a really compelling story. And I love the love story part is fantastic. And the mystery of where the diamonds come from, is also fascinating. So I highly recommend this book. Now, I'm really excited about next Tuesday because I have been, you know, talking a lot about a wonderful book, A Gentleman in Moscow. And it is my favorite book of the year. And I am going to have back on the program Amor Towles, the writer of the book. And I am also going to have Nicholas Guy Smith, who narrated the book. And in this narration, he has managed to capture the essence of A Gentleman in Moscow as I have not seen in any other audible version of a book. He is, and he actually becomes a gentleman in Moscow. And so I really was excited when I contacted him and I said, would you come on? Because one of the things in A Gentleman in Moscow, there are a lot of words that, you know, whether it's the name of foods or name of different things that the pronunciation one might not be sure of. Well, Nicholas, as he said, I can call him Nick, which is lovely because he is absolutely delightful. Nick knows how to pronounce all of those words, and he's going to I'm going to have him give us a little lesson in how to pronounce some of these words that we might not know. We read a lot, and we sometimes don't know exactly how they're pronounced. So that's the fun thing about having an audible book when you have words in a book that you're not sure how to pronounce. So I'm just thrilled and looking forward to talking to Amor Towles and Nicholas Guy Smith on Tuesday. So meanwhile, remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. So take time this weekend to read and to write and to dream. Meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it. This is Patsy with a Z, hoping you will say something nice to somebody today. And I will start by saying thank you to Big Ed in the control room. As always, he has everything organized for me. Have a great weekend and come back on Tuesday for an exciting show. Bye.